to today's Word of Mom Radio here on the Word of Mom Media Network. I'm your host, Dori DiCarlo, and you know we are here week after week, show after show, breaking those myths that mompreneurs and businesswomen building their businesses from home, we're not just dabbling. We are smart, we are savvy, and we are sharing the wisdom of women in business and in life. And we're taking a new turn today, because I'm really excited that Ted Rubin is joining us. And those of you who listen to the show, we don't interview men often, mostly because they don't want to come on Word of Mom Radio. But I have followed Ted for a long time, and through this whole election period, he and I have exchanged some really interesting conversations, and I was excited to ask him to come. So let me give you a little background on him. Ted is a social marketing strategist, an international keynote speaker, CMO of Fotify, an author, a connector, and a true provocateur. In March of 2009, he started using and evangelizing the term ROR, return on relationship, and he hashtags it, hashtag RonR. Many people in the social media world know Ted for his enthusiastic, energetic, and undeniably personal connection to people. I'm going to talk to him about his three different books, and he has more, but one is The Return on Relationship, which he wrote in 2013, How to Look People in the Eye Digitally in 2015, and The Age of Influence in 2017, and they really are must-reads, and I'm just really glad to be bringing him here to Word of Mom Radio. So, Ted, welcome to the show.
I'm so excited to be here, Dori. I've been looking forward to this for a while, and I'm glad we were finally able to make it work.
Me too. I really am. And, you know, in this whole world of Word of Mom, I said this to Ted earlier because I didn't know if it would insult him. But one of the reasons I really wanted to share him, not that I don't find value in men's opinion, because I do. Ted, you are one of the few men I've ever heard speak to women and not mansplain to us. I don't know if it's because you're the father of daughters. I don't know if it's because you're the divorced father of daughters. All of the different things that go into you, but you really speak to us as people, not as just women, and trying to explain to us why we're not doing something. And I find that really compelling in your message. And I just wanted you to know that.
Well, thank you, Daria. I try to save my mansplaining for all the moron guys I know. I think it kind of works better on them. But truth be told, I think you hit on something that's really, you know, that's really important. Is part of it is being the dad of daughters. There is no doubt. And I think every dad of daughters, if they open themselves up to it, and really have a desire to connect with them on a more personal, not just a straight dad-daughter level, or even for the dad-daughter, you know, kind of seek that out. But for me, it's kind of been a series of, you know, it's being the father of daughters. It's then being the divorced dad of daughters, which means more limited time, a little bit, you know, different relationship. And then my story, which a lot of people and probably a lot in the audience know, is that I have to fight to keep my daughters in my life. So that made it even more important to me to understand them. And it, you know, I was always taught by my mom. I would have to say I was taught a lot of things by both my parents, but my mom was the educator and the one who would always tell me how much I'd regret not working harder when I was in college. I'm sure we all heard that from our moms. And I think it took till I was almost 63, which I'm approaching right now, to really say, oh, Mom, you were so right. She also impressed upon me that learning isn't just about when you're in school, that you can always be learning. And, you know, I've put a lot of stock in learning from other people and in educating myself. I've been doing it now about politics, about history, about the whole, you know, what's going on in our country with white supremacy and Black Lives Matter and just the way all of us interact with each other. And I spent a lot of the time doing it as a younger dad, trying to understand my daughters a little better, especially being that I didn't get remarried. I was kind of the mom on the spot when my girls were with me. They were told a lot that I didn't know anything. So it was even a little bit more of a challenge for me to connect with them so that they felt that from me. And then I've also, again, probably because of my mom and a lot of people in my family, not just my daughters, I always just felt that I wanted to be a champion of women and equality and understanding that better. So that's been a big part of what I've done and what I continue to do now, because I think we have a long way to go.
I think that's awesome, because I grew up in an Italian family, and I was taught, you know, my father always told me I was going to wind up alone because no man would ever want a woman like me who's so confident and, you know, doesn't need somebody to take care of them. And, you know, I'm too much like a man. And I was like, Daddy, I take care of myself, because who else is going to take care of me? You know, I didn't wait for somebody else to do it. And as the mother of a daughter, you know, as you're raising girls, it's really hard to teach them to be assertive and confident and everything and still follow rules and not break that independent spirit. And, you know, people who listen to my show, I mean, right now my daughter's back in New Mexico, but, I mean, she has traveled half the world learning. She's a lover of learning and hasn't figured out what she wants to do yet, because she hasn't learned enough about everything she loves to finally make some kind of a decision. And I just want to grow up and be just like her. You know, I do.
Well, I'm glad you brought up like that topic, because, you know, what I used to say to my girls, I was always a fan of Dr. Seuss, and what I say to my girls a lot is, be who you are and say what you feel, because those who mind don't matter and those who matter don't mind. And I learned that lesson as a young kid, because I was very outspoken. Often too outspoken. That was something I had to learn to manage a bit. But my mother wanted to encourage in me and my dad that I should continue to be outspoken. I just had to learn how to maybe do it a little bit more appropriately, which, you know, comes with age and experience. You know, I always like to say that boomers are actually the best people on social media, because they truly know how to build relationships. And it's not because of the generation we come from. It's strictly because of experience. You know, I've been around a lot of years. I can walk into almost any conversation or any room. I can gear it up and get people conflicting more, or I know how to take it down a notch just by words that come out of my mouth or expressions on my face or the body language I employ. And again, that's not because I'm so smart or because of when or where I grew up. It's because I've just been doing it for a lot of years, and I've been very mindful of it. And, you know, another thing I've learned on from the education side of things is that recently I've started doing more reading about men to understand better how we can be better, not just how we relate to others. And just as a recommendation to everybody in your audience, there's a great book out there called For the Love of Men by a woman named Liz Plank. And it's a new, what she calls it is a new vision for mindful masculinity, and trying to steer away from the toxic masculinity that a lot of us grew up with and still live with today. And the whole concept of what it means to be a man, or, you know, being manly or manning up, or, you know, expressions that a lot of us who even didn't necessarily feel that way used without being mindful of it and what it means. I mean, I know I did. I would certainly use that expression, man up, and I've taken it out of my vocabulary. Or if I find myself, you know, I've tried to learn to think before I speak. It's not always easy. I tend to be very reactive. It's one of the reasons I love social media so much, and especially social media conversations, or because you have that moment to think. Nobody expects you to respond immediately. And we have that ability via text, except people like expect an answer very quickly in text. They expect you to be right on it. Whereas if there's a social media conversation going on, very often if you take 5 minutes to rethink what you were about to say, it's very rare that someone will go, "Where are you? Did you go away? Are you still there?" And you can take that moment to think. And I've tried to bring that into my daily life. Obviously, I'm not getting as much practice now because we're not face, at least I'm not face to face with people. I think a lot of us are hopefully being careful, staying home, social distancing. We're not having a lot of those face to face conversations, but I think it's a good time to learn about thinking before you reply, and being mindful of you know, how you're presenting yourself. And again, this book is just a great book because it really just digs into a lot about what we've made in this country about what it means to be a man. And unfortunately, a lot of that is very toxic, not just for the women in our lives, but for the other men around us.
I have two sons. My two sons are both dads. My oldest son, they had a high-risk pregnancy. So it was modified bed rest. Jocelyn literally went to work, which was less than a mile from their house, and home. And my son did the cooking, the cleaning, the laundry, all of it. And they live right up the street from me, and he'd call me up. It's like, oh, Mom, I just made this awesome vodka sauce. Come on up. Or, you know, I just tried this new recipe. And my middle son and his wife, she's now home. Their baby's 5 months old. He's working. And, you know, we did a split Thanksgiving because they have her family, too. My son baked the bread, and he's like the best bread baker in the family. He really is. And both those women are like, thank you for the sons that you raised that are so confident in what they do and caring for their home and caring for their wives and their children. You know, my son taught his wife how to give the baby a bath. She had never changed a diaper. The first diaper Jocelyn ever changed was my grandson. And, you know, whereas my kids just, they grew up with other people's kids and stuff. So, you know, as moms, it is our responsibility to teach our sons the respect, the care of each other. I always talk to my kids about the people they would find. It was never the girl or the guy you're going to find because I wanted them to respect the person they were with as a person and not a gender. I think that's one of the reasons I'm drawn to your message, Ted, because you have that ability. And I want to talk to you about how to look people in the eye digitally. I love that title. And I love what you're talking about in there. So throw out like a nugget or two that are going to make people, because you really need to read the book.
You know, I've been saying this for a long time, and I really believe it now, especially because we've all gotten so accustomed to digital technology that there's almost no excuse to not leverage it for our personal face-to-face relationships. And what I like to say is that 2021 needs to be the year of looking people in the eye digitally. You know, the last few decades of all of marketing tactics and our personal, the ways we personally interact with each other have really made us lazy communicators. I mean, most often we don't even pay attention to who we are talking to other than, you know, as a marketer, other than via the data we collect. And as human beings or in our personal lives, as our preconceived notions of what we think the person we're talking to are about and who they are, instead of understanding that people evolve. You know, recently I had a high school friend say, you know, I've been reading a lot of your content, and this isn't the Ted Rubin I know. I'm like, well, dude, you know, we really haven't hung out for about 40 years. If I haven't evolved and changed, then there's really a problem here. And to get to back it up a moment to something you said right before you asked me that question, when you talked about, you know, moms and how they bring up their sons, I think more attention has to be paid to the dads and how they bring up their sons. Because, like, I even watch this now, a very good friend of mine who I consider like a little brother, he grew up next door to me, his dad wasn't around much, he sets a terrible example for his son. And I tell him this all the time, and I try to explain to him, number one, we grew up in a different time. So a lot of the things that you think is okay to do in front of your son really isn't, and it's for many reasons. Number one, just in general, it's unfortunate that this is what you're modeling for him, you know, the way you look at women, the comments you make, the things you do. But more importantly, it's a different time, and he's going to get in trouble if he emulates what he's learning from you that you think is okay because we're on a boy's boat ride, or it's the boys together, and there's nothing wrong with that expression because we are the boys and we are out and it's just us, and you don't have to worry about your sister and whatever it is that she doesn't like to do. It's just us. But then, you know, modeling behavior is so important. And, you know, I was very lucky. My dad modeled a lot of good behavior for me, especially about how to treat people. The only thing my dad did that I always took, that I learned from and decided to change with my girls is my dad had an expression that a lot of us have probably grown up hearing, and I would venture a guess, and from my experience, I've heard a lot of parents still use it today, that to me needs to be sidelined, is do like I say, not like I do. And that's like a parent's way of saying, it's okay because I'm an adult, I can do something that's not right. But at the same time, they are understanding it's not something they want their child to learn. And what I've always said is that I've always tried to teach my daughters, do like I do. And instead of making it the odd circumstance where I'm saying, okay, you can do what I do, I make that the norm. And when I do something that I don't want them to model, I'm very clear to point it out that this is a special circumstance. An example being years ago when my girls were young, I was taking them on their first ski trip. I'm a divorced dad. You know, it was a whole thing to get their mom to let me to make it say it was okay. And I'm taking them to Colorado to ski. And it was a nightmare. It was the holidays. I pick, you know, I only get certain days because it's in my agreement. And I get to the airport, and it is absolutely nuts. I mean, a friend of mine was driving us, and she's like, oh, my God, you're never going to get in there. And I'm like, just drop us here. She goes, it's no way. The girls can't carry the bags. I said, I'll get us on the plane. And I had to do things that I wasn't proud of. You know, I had to cut in front of the line. I had to slip $100 to the and I was not wealthy at the time. I was fighting for my daughters. I was in debt. But, you know, I knew that this was my only opportunity. If we didn't get on this plane, my ex was absolutely inflexible. There's no way I would get other days. And the girls were looking at me going, Daddy, there's other people here. You're not supposed to be. And I'm like, girls, I know. And you're right. I said, but. Like you guys are so important to me and this trip is so important and we're going to get on this plane and just close your eyes and let Daddy take care of it. And, you know, I got up to the front and I gave the guy, I put something in the guy's hand and all the things that we don't want to model for our children, but that we've learned how to do at one time or another. And people were screaming like, hey, that guy's not supposed to be there. And my girls are very sweet. And fortunately, they learned from the lessons where they were like, Daddy, that man's mad at you and we shouldn't be here. And not only did I position it for them, but once we got through and we got on the plane, you know, I sat them down and I talked to them about it. You know, and I explained to them that, you know, sometimes there are things you have to do and they might not be 100% right. And as long as we're not hurting somebody. And again, I'm not telling you what I did was right or that maybe I should have just not gotten on the plane or whatever it was. But once I made the decision of what I was going to do, I realized that I had to model my behavior so that it wouldn't be a takeaway for them that later they could say, oh, it's okay for me to do this. Or Dad did something bad. Or, you know, again, I positioned it the way I thought best, that I was looking out for them, and I didn't want the trip first to miss this trip together. And whether or not, again, it was the right or wrong thing, I'm 100% positive that I positioned it well for them, and I didn't let them walk away from it thinking, oh, we can just do something and get away with it, and it's okay.
On that note, we're going to take a quick break and say thanks to our sponsors, and we'll be right back on Word of Mom Radio.
We all know a survivor. Some of our friends and family have made it through difficult times. Some of us don't make it. Losing a loved one to cancer, a car accident, or any other unfortunate event can be crippling and unavoidable. But one of the hardest subjects to talk about is suicide. Too often, our youth decide that leaving this place is easier than facing the struggle forced upon them every day. More than 1 in 4 children go through some form of bullying or another. Most of us survive with scars, but for some, the inner demons created cannot be recognized or treated in time to ensure they make it through. Bullying in every form is very much avoidable. It starts with me, and it starts with you. This is Kelly Carius from No Such Thing as a Bully, reminding you to do your part when you see bullying happen. If you don't know what that is, call 403-447-4404 or go to nosuchthingasabully.com.
From the beach to a ball game, from your office to a locker, StadiumBags.com has the clear bags for you. Don't let our name fool you. We are not just for sports fans. The great thing about our bags is, yes, they meet the size requirements for pro and college sports. More importantly, they have the quality, versatility, and style that will stand up to years of use.
You can feel free to clean your bags with the solvents that are going to keep the germs away from your home and your personal belongings and still make safety and convenience coexist. So find us at stadiumbags.com. You'll see why we are your clear choice, because safety, it's in the bag.
And we're back on Word of Mom Radio. We are talking with Ted Rubin. I love what you were just sharing. You know, I always used to say to my kids, I practice what I preach.
I've had a lot of people tell me, oh, they don't understand what you're telling them, or you don't need to explain that to them. And I feel differently. I felt like it was worthwhile. But I also want to jump back a second, because we started talking about looking people in the eye digitally, and I kind of veered away from it because that was something that was on my mind from the last thing you said. But when I talk about looking people in the eye digitally, what I mean is taking the time to know who they are, taking the time to read what's on their post. Like, I never get on a call without checking somebody's page out, without seeing whether there's something important in their lives that just happened, that especially someone I haven't spoken to in a long time. And always when it comes to a business call, I will check to make sure I know, you know, where they worked, what they did. If someone reaches out to me, you know, via LinkedIn and says they want to have a conversation or somewhere else, I always go to look. I don't assume they're in the same job. I assume that maybe something changed, and there's something that I should know about it. So it's, to me, it's just really important to take that time. There's so much information out there that so many of us have overlooked that it's incredible. I just see people all the time asking questions they shouldn't have to ask because they should have known it before they got on the call. And that they just skip over these things because they're too busy with something else, or they just don't take the time to understand the value of everything that's sitting in front of their face that they could be asking about. You know, I tell a story a lot about when I first graduated college, and I recently posted about it. And it actually got a lot of play. And I talked about when I first graduated college and I got my first job. And it was in sales, and my dad knew that, and he was in sales, and a lot of what he had taught me was about that. So at the end of the first week, he calls me up, and he says, so do you have your first appointment? Because he knew that that was part of my job. And I said, yeah. And he goes, well, when is it? I said, it's Thursday. He said, what time? I said, at 10 o'clock. He said, what time are you going to get there? I said, I don't know, about 5 to 10. He goes, no, get there at 9 o'clock in the morning. Remember, this was 1980. So he's like, walk around the neighborhood, see what restaurants are in the neighborhood, what other things of interest are there. Go in the building, look at the board, see what other companies are on there. Get up to the office early, get a chance to look around. And if there's any way you can get his or her assistant to let you in the office, try to get in there and see what photos are on the wall. You know, is he or she a golfer, a grandfather, a mother, a father? Do they play golf? Do they sail? Find points of emotional connection so that you can talk about something that interests them, instead of just being there for what interests you and selling them something. And if you get a conversation going, you're going to start building a relationship, and you're going to make it to the point where they ask you for your information instead of you having to give it to them. I always like to say that I prefer to get bought than to sell myself. And I take this into every part of my life. I mean, I have this in my personal life. When I used to date, you know, I would want women that would reach out to me, not because I'm afraid to ask, but because I wanted someone to say, like, I'm interested in you, instead of me trying to sell myself. And there's a few reasons for that. You know, part of it is just it's always nice for someone to want you. But part of it is also because when we tend to sell ourselves, we tend to oversell ourselves. My mom used to say to me, you know, be careful about building up expectations that you can't live up. And a lot of us do that in our personal lives and in our business lives. I mean, I was on a sales call just the other day with my company and our president, and he's offering stuff that nobody asked for. And I'm texting him behind the scenes. We're on a Zoom call going, dude, what are you doing? They didn't ask him for that. He goes, but I know they're going to ask for it. I said, first of all, you're the sales guy. I'm the marketing guy. I'm the partner. This is supposed to be your expertise. You shouldn't be panicking and offering stuff you don't have to offer. We're deep enough into this conversation that they're going to come back and ask for what they want. But what ends up happening, of course, what he was offering was something that we really couldn't afford to do, because he didn't want to lose the deal. And I find a lot of us do that in our personal lives, you know, everywhere. You know, oh, sure, I can be available every weekend. That's great. But you can't be available every weekend. Or when I was divorced and my girls were younger, everybody knew that I would never, ever miss my weekend with my daughters. I had no flexibility with my ex. There was no switching. Her term was you snooze, you lose. And that applied for me being late for a pickup as well. Like, I used to panic. I'd get pulled over by cops because I'd be speeding like a maniac because I got caught in traffic. And the only good thing I had going for me is a lot of police officers are divorced. And when they saw this look of a panicked dad on their hands, I would tell you that at least two or three times they said, follow me. You know, I'll
aww.
Get you there. You know, oh, yeah, they were fabulous. But, you know, again, if you put yourself in that position that you overpromise and then you can't deliver. And I just think it's a really important thing to consider with everybody you're doing. You know, be straight, be honest, be upfront, say what's real, say what you can do. You know, again, you know, everybody in the business world knew. This is how a call would always go when someone wanted me to be an event. Hey, Ted, it's Dory. We're doing this mom event on the weekend of January 22nd. Is that your weekend? And that was the exact words because that's the terminology I used. I used it online. I used it in social media. I used it in face-to-face. Was that if it's not my weekend, I can be there. But if it's my weekend, I can't be there. And I had my girls every other Wednesday night, so I would never go anywhere unless I could leave either late night on Wednesday or early Thursday morning, and then I had to be back for whenever the next time was that I had my daughters, because I just would not miss it. And I have this conversation with divorced dads all the time, you know, especially newly divorced dads, who are like, well, you know, I got business to do and I've got to be there. I said, but it's okay. My kids understand. I'm like, no, they don't. They don't understand. They understand when something's regular, when they know what they can count on, when they know you're going to be there. And, you know, look, some of us are fortunate, you know, like the discussion you and I had, to have a good divorce, as they say it, with the parents work well together. Many of us aren't, and you don't know what's being said when you don't show up or if you can't be there, even when you have a good excuse. And, you know, your kids will always say it's okay because they love you and they desperately want your love. And I just think consistency is so important in that case. So that was just something that was part of, like, my brand. And I like to say that a brand is what a business or a person does, but a reputation is what people remember and share. And my reputation was that my daughters came first above all else. And everybody learned to live with that. And they do. See, that's the other side of it. You know, we're fortunate. We live in a different world than a lot of our parents grew up in, where things were a lot less flexible. And first of all, they understand. Second of all, if people don't understand, there's so many ways for us to not even have to tell them. I mean, I can't tell you how many soccer games I was at where people thought I was in my office, you know, back in the day, because I just had my phone and I made myself available. But, like, I never missed a sporting event as long as I was in town. And again, I never missed my specified time with my girls because that was my brand. And right now, as you know, I have a very difficult relationship with my daughters. I have an ex-wife who is an alienator and has done an amazing job of keeping my daughters from me, even at their current ages of 23 and 25. It's a very difficult situation. But I know, and it's one of the things I hold on to, is that they know that I was always there. They might not say it now. They might be at an age where it's not the most important thing to them. But inside, like every once in a while, when I'll be having a conversation, if I'm lucky enough, my younger one, I'm fortunate to still be in communication with. My older daughter, since she graduated college 3 years ago, cut me off. She got engaged this summer in August. And the only way I know is because a friend saw it on social media. And my other daughter hasn't told me about it either, nor has anybody in their family. And, you know, and I've learned to change my expectations. I've learned to, there's a Jewish expression called kveling, and it means being happy for somebody, embracing someone else's happiness. And what I've learned to do is, thank God my daughters are healthy. They're both incredibly successful in their academic endeavors. My older daughter just graduated with a master's degree from Columbia University. My younger daughter is in her second year at Harvard Law School. Now, I don't get to participate or hear a lot about it, but I grab the tidbits I can and I relish in their success. Although don't get me wrong, I am destroyed over the fact that not only has no one shared with me about this wedding, but that I won't be included, but I'm also doing my best to revel in her happiness. Fortunately, we have the digital tools we have now. I've been able to find out his name and research him, and she has been going out with him for about 4 years. So I found out about him before she stopped communicating with me, although she never allowed me to meet him. I'm happy for the fact that she's found somebody, and I just try to learn, and don't get me wrong, it's hard, and I've been fortunate to have help with it. But again, I'm trying to model behavior. I've used a hashtag for many years, This Dad Won't Quit, and I started that back in 2008 when my ex tried to take my kids away. I had a three to four year long battle to keep my rights to them in court, which fortunately I won, although, you know, you can't manage the future when they're out of the court's realm. But I always wrote and talked about it. I have a hashtag and I have a Twitter handle, This Dad Won't Quit, and I have a divorce dad section in tedrubin.com in my blog. But I'm trying to evolve it now because This Dad Won't Quit, which is, I'm still the dad that won't quit, and I have a video about that, which you can also find if you go to YouTube and just look at The Dad That Doesn't Quit, which is really just about my love for my daughters and how I integrated into a lot of what I do, you know, my love for them, what I've learned from them. But what I've done is I'm trying to evolve it from this dad won't quit to the dad who will always love. And the distinction I'm going to explain, which I think some people will grasp who are intuitive, is that this dad won't quit is a much more hands-on, I'll be there on my weekends, I won't miss anything, I'm going to participate as best I can, I'm never going to give up on you, I'm always going to be there for you, which is a little bit overwhelming for when someone becomes a little bit older and it can come across as desperate and difficult to manage. So I'm trying to evolve it to a little more hands-off approach, which is the dad who will always love, which takes more of the, I'll be at a distance if that's what you prefer, but I'm always going to look for the things I can find online about you, and I'm always here if you need me. And I will tell you that it's difficult with my younger daughter, but I have a relationship with her, and I am the one she calls when she's in trouble, always. Because she knows that my first question is going to be, my first question after, are you okay? Because, of course, that's all of our questions when the phone rings at 3:00 in the morning. But I have to tell you, when I see it happening, first I get a thrill because I know that she needs something. Then I get the panic of, oh, my God, is it something serious? And then when I learn it's not really serious, I lost my wallet, I'm stranded somewhere, my car broke down, I'm in Europe and I got somewhere and the Airbnb I was supposed to have doesn't exist. You know, those are the kind of things where I rise up and I'm thrilled because I know that they know they can count on me. And every once in a while, my younger daughter will slip because she will not talk about her older sister. And I've learned not to ask because it just puts undue pressure on her. And she's getting so much pressure from my ex and, you know, from her mom and from her sister not to share with me that I just don't ask anymore. But every once in a while when she gets overcomfortable in those situations where I'm there for her, she'll say, I just wish Danny knew that you're always there. You know, what I'd like to do, and this is another lesson in mindfulness, is I'd like to jump into that door. I'd like to jump through that door. Yes, Danny, I wish you would, Nikki. I wish you would talk to her. But you can't do that because then I will ruin what I have with her. And although it's an opportunity that's hard to resist, I've worked very hard, especially over the last year, to not take advantage of that. When I text her with something that's important, I used to then, once I had her attention, it was like the opportunity to say, how's school and how's your boyfriend and are you okay? And I've learned not to do that because that's what scares her away. She's worried about answering something that I might need an answer to because she's worried it opens that door and she's going to get asked too many questions. And I'm sharing a lot here that's hard to grasp if you don't know the whole story, but it's not a simple situation. It's a very difficult one. My daughters live in a very difficult world where they're not even allowed to call me dad to their mother or in her presence. So, yes, they're 23 and 25, but what I've learned from I'm very fortunate to have a sister-in-law, my older brother's wife, who's been around well before I was married or they were born, who's a Harvard-educated child psychiatrist who always says to me, like, don't push. They're not ready. 23 and 25 is not adults. And especially in their case, consider them as if they're 10 and 12, because that's the world they're living in. And they're suffering from Stockholm syndrome, more or less, which is being in love with your captor. But in this case, it's someone that I would never discourage them from being in love with. It's their mother. And I never, if every once in a while over the years, you know, you slip, you get upset. But I mean, even throughout the worst years, I wouldn't badmouth their mother in front of them because they were hearing that about me constantly. And I was trying to set an example of that. That's not the way it has to be. And that's not what I'm going to do, to the point where, like, the one time I remember losing it and saying something I shouldn't have said, you know, when the window was open on the car and I was outside the car, and to, like, literally, not to this day because we don't really talk much anymore, but up until a few years ago when we were talking more often, they'd quote that one instance. And I remember looking at them and going, really? Like, I did it once. But because I don't do it, it's something that stood out for them. And, you know, again, I'm rambling, so I apologize, but I tend to get off on this. I just think it's so important. I try to talk to, you know, my business partner, John Andrews, is the father of a daughter, and him and I are, we like to call ourselves business soulmates. And we're incredibly close friends, and he's been a savior of mine in so many ways. And, you know, he talks to me a lot about his daughter, and I try to tell him, like, there's things that he can learn from this. You don't have to be in the situation. I mean, John, thank God, has a great marriage, and they co-parent together wonderfully. But he still runs up into these things where, you know, he needs to think through, you know, what does he say to his daughter? How does he handle it? And having a daughter, you know, watching the mother and daughter, she's 14 now, so they're starting to, you know, bump heads a lot, and how he's the one on the outside trying to manage it. So we talk a lot about these things.
You know, in listening to you share, I flashed back to my son, my oldest, who was 5 and a half, when his dad and I separated. My kids were 6, 4, and 2 when we formally separated. And he was a little over 5. We were at a friend's house. They were divorced. And they were literally having this knockdown, drag-out fight in the driveway. So much so that I had Stephanie in my arms as she was crying. And my kids were sitting on the back patio. And it's like, we have to wait until this is done to leave. And as we got in the car and we were driving, he goes, you know, Steph doesn't mind that they're divorced. It's kind of fun in a way. She has 2 rooms. She gets 2 Christmases and 2 birthdays and things. But what I don't understand is why somebody can be so angry that they can't even remember the fact that at one point they loved each other enough to get married and have a family. And that was coming from a 5-year-old.
Yeah.
And it really was probably one of the reasons that my children's father and I, if the situation had been different, if I was a different person, he wanted to go to court, it was going to get, I refused to be ugly. And, you know, 25 years later, we're very successfully divorced. He cooked for me for my birthday. We spent holidays with our family together. We kind of fell back in love because of our grandchildren, but not on a personal level. Just that, you know, look at what we did. And it's so funny, on my Facebook page right now, there's a family picture every time we all get together because my daughter's the traveler. I never know when she's going to be there. We take a family picture, and if you look in the far corner, you'll actually see a different color pants. That's actually my children's dad. And I didn't want him on my Facebook wall because he doesn't do social media.
Is that the khaki, the knee?
Yes,
is that the knee that's there?
That's my children's father there. And it's so funny because his cousin sent me a message about what a beautiful picture it was, and I private messaged her and sent her the full picture. And she was like, you are such a beautiful person, Dory. She was like, really, that's awesome. And I told the kids, I said, believe me, if you want to put that in a frame, I love that daddy's in it. I just didn't want him on my Facebook wall. Because how do I explain to people, oh, yeah, it's my children's dad. Yeah, we're successfully divorced, blah, blah, blah. My pastor has bugged me for years about writing a book on how to have a successful divorce. And I'm like, you know what? It's a really short book. It's just remembering that they're not the pawns in the chess game of your life because nobody deserves it, but you really don't.
Unfortunately, there's a whole industry around it. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
the lawyers teach this to their clients, and they want these things. And what I'll tell you just from a little different perspective than yours, because you're very fortunate, but you know what? If you want to hate each other, hate each other. Just like what I always say and I say this to moms usually more than dads, because I tend to talk to a lot of women about these things. You know, a lot of this also, you know, Collective Bias, the company that my business partner John Andrews founded and brought me in as a partner years ago, was a company that had a community of 4,000 mom bloggers who created content for us for brands. And we were like one of the first companies to do this. So I was talking to women a lot, and I'd hear about all the bad things their husbands did. And, of course, they'd look at me when I started to talk, and they'd say, I hope you're not going to defend him. I'm like, no, I'm not going to defend him. I said, what I am going to defend, though, is that just leave the kids out of it. Like, fight him.
Right.
Have those fights if you want to have them. Have a knockdown drag out if you want, but do it away from the kids. Like, and I tell dads this all the time because I was fortunate to have a childhood friend who pulled me aside, you know, in the beginning when all my stuff was still in the house and she wouldn't, you know, she had me, she pulled the classic, called the cops, had me kicked out of the house, you know, because I'd been there for, because I couldn't afford. I was supporting this huge house. I was living downstairs. And I wanted my stuff. And he goes, you can buy more stuff. Like, she's not going to give it to you. Like, you know, he kind of knew the situation. And he's like, just forget about it. Buy new clothes. He goes, I'll write you a check. I'll help you buy the new clothes if you don't have the money right now. You know, he said, and unfortunately, look, understand that some of us, and for some people, it's impossible because your partner, whether it's the husband or the wife, whichever ex, makes it impossible to keep the kids out of it because they're always bringing them in. And then what I say is just do your best to model your behavior. You know, I understand that it can't be helped. And look, there are certain things you can't back off of. And my thing was I would not back off of being in my daughter's lives. And that was the, like, I gave up the house. I gave up all my belongings. I gave up the money. I was fine with all of that. I even gave more child support and everything else than I could have afforded then. And I was willing to go into debt to do it. But what I wouldn't give up was access to my kids. And that's where I drew the line. And unfortunately, it got very ugly. And, it, you know, again, I also know a lot of parents where, thank God, you know, in mine, unfortunately, there's mental illness involved. But where there's not, where it's just the anger, what I'll tell you is most often that will subside. And I know a lot of people that had very ugly divorces and had a few years that were really bad that in the end they did what you did. They put the kids first. They realized that they could have some kind of a friendship based around that. And that's fortunate. And just realize that for most people, if you open yourself up to it, you can get there. There are some situations where you can't, unfortunately. I mean, I've been divorced since 2002, and my ex still will not, I mean, the things that get said and the things that get, I have nothing to do with her. I've completely divorced myself. You know, my kids are older. I don't have to be involved. I did my best even while they were younger to just stay away as much as I could, give in as much as I could, and it won't go away. But there are, but for the most part, most relationships are not like that. And if you think about it and you're mindful of it, you can at least get to a point where it's a lot easier for your children, even as adults.
I agree with you. Know, and I want to go back what you said about lawyers. You know, it's not a divorced lawyer's job to help you through the pain and suffering of your marriage ending. It's their job to get you to argue about clause 14 on page 97 about Aunt Betsy's table that neither one of you likes. And then the two of them are having martinis at the club, enjoying the fact that their legal fees got bumped up again. You know, my children's dad and I sat down at the table and wrote up our separation agreement, had it notarized, and a year later we took it to a mediator. And the guy was like, let me tell you a little about myself. I raised my hand. I was like, are you a lawyer? He said, yes. I said, are you licensed to practice in New York State? He said, yes, I am. I said, then for $285 an hour, that's all I need to know about you. And we were done in 2 hours, and he was like, in my professional opinion, this is a really unorthodox agreement. And I was like, you know what? It's your job to make it legal. It's our job to make it work. And that was in 1995. Never set foot in the courtroom, never did any of that, ever, 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 because I refused. My children's dad wanted to go that route, and I felt like we'll never be friends. And he was like, how can we be friends? We're getting divorced. And I said, because three people are in there sleeping, and it's not their fault. And we owe it to them to do whatever we have to do to find a way to create a friendship. And it took a couple of years. It wasn't rosy right from the start. It definitely took a couple of years. And at one point, we even tried to get back together. And that's when my kids were like, okay, now we understand why we're divorced. You guys work way better in separate houses. And it's true. We just don't bring out the best in each other. We're just too different. But you know what? Our kids mattered, and now we have these. We have two grandchildren. Hopefully more will be coming, and we're really lucky. And when it's so funny, Ted, one of the things I wanted to see in this interview was that you would actually talk about things you don't talk about in interviews, and I'm so glad that this is what wound up being our conversation. I really am.
Well, I'm glad we had this conversation too, Dory. Thank you so much for including me.
You're welcome. I'm serious. You know, your marketing prowess, all of the things that you do, everyone knows. I'm really glad that people are getting to hear another part of Ted Rubin. And it's what makes you so special online. It really is, because you are so authentically yourself. And I really appreciate that. And I hate that I'm wrapping up this interview, but I am. So just let everybody know how to reach you, please.
It's real easy. I'm Ted Rubin online just about everywhere, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube. It's Ted Rubin USA is my YouTube channel, but also I'll make it even easier for you guys. My phone number is 516-270-5511. I actually pick up my phone, and when I don't, my voicemail is not full, so you can leave me a voicemail, and I listen to them. TedRubin@gmail.com is my email address, and feel free to be in touch anytime.
Ted, I want to thank you. Really, I really want to thank you for sharing so much insight, just being authentically you. So thank you for taking the time to be with us. And for all of you tuning in to Word of Mom Radio, thanks so much for sharing time with us. We are going to close out with our fabulous theme song from Smith Sisters Bluegrass. So till next time, this is Dori DiCarlo saying go out and create a marvelous you. Bye for now.
She is sure.
She is sure.
She is strong.